Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
You know, you were chucking about a little applause before you went out because Norm was sinking.
It's nice
the
to get a pre-applause.
It
yeah.
is. I know that we have talked about the famous Terry Gross Gene Simmons interview from Fresh Air.
So yes. Tough to listen to.
Which is amazing.
As somebody who's done a lot of interviews, it is painful.
Oh, it's super painful. But also, I really appreciate Terry. Like, at some point, he goes right after her, and she just, you can hear her brain go, oh, yeah, okay, I'm just going to tell the truth. And she's like, actually, you're kind of a drag.
it's like the moment where she's just like, well, okay, I'm going.
Screw it.
I don't go adversarial very often here, but I know how to do that.
Hey, Gene Simmons, gaze upon the field upon which I grow my fucks. Yes.
You have come into my house and disrespected me, Gene Simmons, and now I will dismantle you.
But the other one is the Ice-T interview, and it's also been memory holed. You can't find it.
Mm. Wow, really?
Have I not talked about this?
No, I don't know if I've ever heard
so
that one.
It's from a long, long, long time ago. I mean, like, maybe the late 90s.
Oh.
And she has Ice-T on, and she's talking to him, and he's super smart, right? He's, I mean, a brilliant creator, and also, like, really able to talk about the cultural impact and the reasons and the, you know, I love hearing Ice-T talk about
this. He is self-aware in a way that a lot of musicians aren't.
Totally.
Yeah.
So she goes, to bring that to fore, says, look, I want to talk to you about the word bitch in your lyrics because you claim to, you know, want to spend your career uplifting young black men, but what about young black women? A bitch doesn't necessarily do that. And he says, well, you know, and he goes into a linguistic explanation about different cultures, et cetera, and gives a very reasoned explanation. And there's a long pause. And at the end, Terry goes, all right, I'm not buying it. And he laughs and he goes, ha ha, all right, well, that's cool. He goes, someday someone might call you bitch. And there's this pause, and she,
what?
And he goes, and you might go, hey, go call me a bitch. And he'll say, come over here, baby.
Oh,
and he
no.
leans into the microphone. And he goes, stop your crying. And he says, you know I love you. And again, pause. And
weird.
He goes, but you still my bitch. And she goes, we'll be right back after this. It's crazy town.
She's so good.
It's so shocking. I remember like pulling the car over being like, did anyone else hear that?
So I was actually listening to another NPR interview show forum with Michael Krasny this morning on the way over. And he had George Takei on.
Oh,
and
a wonderful man.
A delightful human being. You know, he was talking about Trump and immigration. And I mean, he has a book coming out, but he was talking about internment camps in Japanese internment camps.
Where he spent part of his childhood
in three different ones.
Yeah.
It was a fascinating interview, but like just in the mechanics of interviewing someone, he's so gregarious and outgoing and has a million stories and is ready to go that they hit the wall. So Krasny got the hey, we got to cut in for the fundraiser.
Yeah,
and like apparently somebody passed him a note or something that George could see, and George was like, "What?" He was in the middle of a story. He's on a roll. He's just dead stop. What? And Krasny's like, "I've got to go. We've got to throw it to the fundraiser."
Oh no, the short episode.
And I was like, "Oh, Mike Krasny, I feel so bad. This is such the unpleasant moment for you. This is so hard."
Amazing.
But George Takei, you can't stop him.
I will tell you that when I did Michael Krasny's show,
this is Forum on local KQED. Yeah,
but it's also available. I mean, you can get it as a podcast. You get it everywhere.
So my wife actually came to that podcast because she had taken a class from him.
Oh, really? Like,
you see?
Like 20 some years ago.
Upstate, yeah.
And he remembered.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was like totally amazing.
So for what it's worth, I really love, like, it's one of my favorite NPR shows. I listen to it whenever I'm in the car in the morning, like at that time, Forum.
Yeah.
He does a really, really good job of bringing on interesting people. He does the thing where he gets people that present all the sides of an argument often, but he does it without doing the bad thing that, you know, like mainstream media did for a long time about climate change and vaccines and stuff like that.
Yeah, he doesn't equivocate.
He doesn't equivocate.
He also, I'll tell you, having been interviewed by him a couple of times, and I've gotten to see, look, I'm very aware that people like Krasny sometimes don't have a high level of familiarity with the people that they're interviewing.
How could they?
Well, they interview so many people. It's not like they don't have a 20-person research staff.
It's a fire hose of material he's got to manage. And so he wasn't crazy familiar with Mythbusters. He knew us as local heroes and that kind of stuff. So I got to see the degree to which his team does great research for him and works with him, and how he, like, even between ad breaks or whatever you call it, station IDs, it's beautiful to watch that machine operate. Well, right? Him and his team are a fantastic unit in terms of taking new information and getting a really substantive interview out of a subject he might not have even met
before. And it's recorded live.
Yeah.
Just unlike Terry Gross's show, which is recorded and then edited over, I assume, a period of days or weeks.
Mm-hmm.
He shoots it live, so it's a high wire. And I love a live interview. It's really exciting and really, really... really
for anybody that's... and to talk about the live, it's live to tape.
Really?
Isn't it?
No, it is broadcast.
Oh, it's actually broadcast.
Yeah, he takes calls.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, because the live to tape live to tape are effectively the same thing, because they record, like, Craig Ferguson's show was done that
Fallon
way.
Fallon is recorded live to tape.
They record it as if they're live, and that's always a higher energy than when they're recording, knowing that they'll edit. And I'll tell you that, like, when I first started doing interviews for Mythbusters, and you do these radio tours as well as the television stuff, and the radio tours are like, get on the phone at 6 a.m. and do 25 interviews for 3 hours.
For Windows releases and
super
stuff.
Super fun. I find them super fun.
Yes.
Minute by minute, you're scheduled. Yep.
But it was fascinating that the shows that I had, that I always have the most fun doing, are the big morning zoo shows in markets all over the country. Because there's like six people in the room. They're all yelling and screaming. You barely have to do any heavy lifting because they have their whole machine.
They're doing their bits. Yeah.
The worst ones are the ones in which you're pre-recorded and the person asking you questions will not be on tape.
With you?
Yeah. So it'll be like, you'll be like some soundbite news story on a show.
Oh.
So there's this one guy in the Midwest who, every time I do that show, and it's been years, but every time I did that show, it was the same one. You get in and he go, oh, all right, well, okay, if you're ready to start recording. And you go, yeah. And he goes, all right, so tell me about the show.
He's giving you nothing.
And you're just like, energy. Really? That okay. Well, we, you know, and bringing any of the energy you're bringing, and it's just it's horrifying.
It's so hard to so I used to do those for the Fox Radio Network when new Windowses would come out, because I was the Windows guy at a computer magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and start talking to people on the East Coast and go all the way across the country. But there was there's one station in Tampa. Tampa is largely retirement community. So the hosts, instead of being like people in their like mid-20s, early 30s, are retirees. And the producer came on beforehand and she was like, hey, just so you know, this is like Gene and Jeff. Just know Gene is a woman, but her voice is very deep. And I said, okay, got it. And I'm starting to talk. And I was like, this can't possibly be Gene, can it? This has got to be Jeff. And I was like, and I took my wings and I flew right up to the sun.
Right.
And I called her Jeff.
Oh, no.
And she was like, no, actually, this is Gene. And I felt about that small.
Yeah,
and then, you know, I had 30 seconds between that one and the next one to get going.
And all of a sudden your brain is a guy sleeping behind his Tesla steering wheel.
Yeah, it was just like, you just see it. You see it coming at you and you're like, oh, man, I'm going to swing for the fences on this one. I got to go for it. So,
yeah.
And sometimes they have angles. They're going for they the whole interview. They just want to ask that one question or the one thing. And
yeah, there's that. And then there's the morning zoo shows do tend to redound to the, can you bust the myth about my ex-wife? You know, the humor hasn't changed for some of these shows in 30 or 40 years.
For that voice, Adam.
What's that?
You need more cowbell for that voice.
Well, how are you guys? I was actually in Tennessee last week for a couple of days.
Everyone that I went to high school with and still lives there, let me know. Yeah, you went to as Jay Leno said, I can't believe that there's a place called Johnson City. You were in Johnson City,
I was
right?
In Johnson City. Yeah. I flew into the Tri-Cities Airport.
Beautiful and toothless. Tri-Cities Regional Airport.
And I Yeah, I had a lovely week, and I finished it off by talking to our friends over at Boston Dynamics in Boston.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, more on that as the months continue.
Okay,
I had an interesting occurrence in Boston.
Okay.
I caught an early flight home, a 7:40 a.m. flight. So I'm in downtown Boston. My car was to pick me up at 6 a.m. That's plenty of time for me to make a 7:40 a.m.
Yeah,
flight.
It's close.
Right. So as I normally do, I never set one alarm. I set three or four, all within 3 or 4 minutes of each other.
Yeah.
My alarm went off at 5:40 a.m. I hit snooze because I knew there was one for 5:45, 5:55.
Sure. The planned snooze is best.
Hit that snooze, promptly slept until 6:45 in the morning.
Oh, no.
So 55 minutes before a plane has to take
55
off.
55 minutes before my plane has to take
no
off.
No way.
Now, let me explain how I do an early morning on the road. When I have a super early call, I have to get up and out by 6 a.m., I actually line up my shoes, socks, pants, underwear, shirt on the floor in order.
Oh, yeah.
And everything gets packed. So literally all I have to do is get out of bed, take that last swig of mouthwash so I'm not an appalling human being, put on my clothes, and walk out the door. I've done the idiot check for all the chargers and everything.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay.
So I was downstairs in 2 minutes to find out.
Brush your teeth, right?
Yes.
Okay.
To find out, though, I get downstairs to find out that my driver has left, that he stayed until 6:30. And then left.
But no one reached up to wake you
up. He's like,
well,
they didn't have your number. And I'm like, they could have called up to the room. He had my name.
We're under Bugs Bunny.
Yeah. No, I was under my name. And so I called a cab.
Uh-huh.
There was a cab right there at the hotel. I got in the cab. I said, hey, how fast can you get to the airport? Because I'm really late. My flight leaves in 50 minutes.
Wow. So you're 10 minutes from the... Well, you're carrying on, I assume.
I was.
Okay.
So he's like, oh, no, we can make it there in 15 minutes. And then he promptly drives 45 miles an hour the whole way.
On the freeway.
And there's no traffic.
I'm shaking my head.
I wasn't going to yell at him. He was doing his job. People have a comfort zone that they're driving in. That was fine. And in the end, I made the flight.
Unbelievable.
No problem. There was this funny moment when... So I was in the A16 gate, which means at Boston Logan, you go through security, you run up, and then you have to go down like 150 feet and then a quarter of a mile across this tunnel and up 150 feet to get to the gate.
It has a people mover, though.
And it does, but that's not going to help me when I'm running.
Doubles your speed.
Not for running. It doubles my walking speed.
One third.
Still not as fast. So I'm running the whole way. I'm running down the escalator. I'm running across
it
because I'm not sure. I don't know Logan well enough to know precisely how long it'll take me to get to this gate. So as I'm reaching the bottom of the running down escalator, the 200-foot-long one, there's a Sikh gentleman standing there with his suitcase at his side. And I just say, as I'm running up, excuse me, hey, excuse me. And he moves over and lets me pass. And I run back up the escalator, run all the way down to the gate. And they've just started boarding. I happen to...
What?
Yeah. Literally at that second, I hand them my ticket. I get in. I sit down. 5 minutes later, who sits down next to me but that Sikh gentleman
who was taking his time. There's an important lesson there.
Well, no, I did it in my head. I was like, he flies out of here all the time. He must because he knows precisely how much time he has. I did not.
Do you find that in those high stretch situations, especially for making a flight, you are the amount of like brain activity you're firing on all cylinders?
You get the time slowdown. I get the time slowdown.
It's a ticking clock.
Yeah,
it is a ticking clock. Look, I work really hard on my mental state at that point because if you travel with me, as my wife does, I can get really panicky because I'm a super obsessively on time guy.
Hmm.
So it means can be very unpleasant to be in an airport with when things are confusing. So I work really hard to try and like, let's remember the stakes. This is just an early flight home. If I miss it, there's like 40 flights today getting from Boston to San Francisco. It's not a tragedy if I don't make this. I'm not going to die. Nothing's going to happen. So
I do play out all the scenarios. I had a scenario where SFO, I'm parking and the tram is for some reason not working that morning. Right?
Yeah.
That's a great thing to happen.
And that tram is, I've built in my time to get to the gate by taking the tram.
Oh.
And it says, not working. You could walk or you could take the tram the other direction. One is 30 minutes and one's 26 minutes. And the flight leaves in like 18 minutes.
Right.
Your window to get on the plane is closed. Yeah.
Well, one, my first instinct is start moving.
Yeah.
Start moving
fast,
in
fast.
That direction.
Yep.
And we're like, I'm going to... if I think, I can think on while I'm moving.
Yep.
But always make
the,
forward progress.
The hardest
progress.
Thing in the world is to wait for the tram at that point for
yeah.
me.
No. And especially like SFOs can be really...
You have to go all the way to rental car return if you go the wrong direction.
Right. Yeah. Jesus Christ. How about when United used to book some of their seats through US Air? So you'd get to the US Air counter only for them to tell you had to go all the way to Terminal 1 to go.
Or United's in Terminal A sometimes now, too, and you have to walk all the way around. Even,
and there's nothing on your ticket that says
you.
Which.
No. I one time made it from my house, which is a 25-minute drive. I waited. I had a cab or a Lyft, whatever, Lyft, Uber, cab, something coming. And the guy just didn't come, and he didn't come, and he didn't come. And I was going for a really long time, so I didn't want to have to pay to park.
Right.
I was like, I'm going to be gone for 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to pay $1,000 to park.
Sure.
I'm waiting. Guy never comes. So I'm like, Gina and my daughter are already on the East Coast. They're meeting me. Like, Gina's at the end of a rope. She's had a toddler for like 10 days.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, I have to make this flight. So I get in the car. I drive. And I'm cheap. So instead of going and parking in International where it's going to be like $30 a day.
You park at the long-term parking.
I parked at Park and Fly.
Yeah.
Which is like an off-site, off-site rental place.
Yeah.
And I told the guy on the way in that I was running really late. Can you please have the bus follow me?
Yeah.
I was like, you know, my cab didn't come, yada, yada. He's like, we got you. So I get in. The Park and Fly guy's like, hey, there's three other people there, but you're going to miss your flight, right? I was like, yeah, I have literally 18 minutes to get there before they close the door.
Right.
So he's like, buckle in. And he just, the exact opposite of your guy. Guns it. We take the speed bump on the way out of the parking lot in the air, right? He turns. You just go straight on the freeway. It's like one stop, next exit to the freeway from there.
That we feels made good.
It. I got to the gate. I had pre-check, so I went straight through. It was back in the days when there were only like three people in that line.
Yep.
I already had my boarding pass. I ran all the way to the back of the B terminal, all the way at the far, far end. And I got there, and they were starting to push the door shut. And I was like, wait. And they said, are you Smith? And I said, yes, I'm Smith. Here's my boarding pass. And he was like, you just barely made it. Because if that door had clicked, it's over. There's nothing we can do.
One time on Virgin, I told the story before the podcast. No, it wasn't because I was famous.
Oh, okay.
It was because the pilot and Jet. Yeah, no, it wasn't. Actually.
Okay.
I love it when you find someone who's willing to join you on the journey.
Yeah, those people made me a customer for life. Those people made me a customer for life because that guy recklessly drove to get me to the airport on time and let me be cheap and not pay $1,000.
Near miss. Yeah. Great YouTube search term.
By the way, I just got a lovely text from friend of Tested, Randall Monroe, who thanks me. I interviewed him on stage here in San Francisco on his book tour.
Yeah.
For his new, wonderful new book.
We should get him on the podcast.
We should. No, I tried. He's, you know, on a book tour. It's totally insane.
Yeah, yeah.
But what a lovely interview that guy is.
Yeah. Is that going to be online someplace? Can we watch that?
You know what? I'll try and find it.
Okay.
Not sure. I was in Berkeley. I don't think it was recorded. Yeah.
Okay.
There are a lot of interviews he did publicly for this book, and it's wonderful. In fact, I'd say the deepest dive that I've yet heard is on Ezra Klein's show.
Okay.
Which is actually a terrific, terrific freaking podcast. Usually politics. Ezra Klein is crazy smart, and he's a super fan of Randall Monroe. So they get really into the weeds in a lovely way.
The chapters that Chris Hadfield answered, where he asked Chris Hadfield questions in that book, are exceptional.
Well, that was the best part of the interview his going through, like he said, he called Chris Hadfield with the goal to get Chris Hadfield to hang up on him by asking him ever more absurd aviation questions. And so he opened with, if you had to land a plane and there's no roads and there's no parking lots and no flat land around you, is there a crop that is better than others? And not only did he take this question seriously, but Chris had actual protocols in his head about which crops are better to land in at which times of year. Like, corn is good, but only until May, right? Like,
yeah.
Wow.
And it went nuts from there. Like, there was no question too absurd for Chris not to have considered it already as part of surviving in the air.
Like, the moments that we had with Chris, like, at the green room at Comic-Con and stuff like that, we had, like, an hour, and I was just grilling him. I was like, am I asking too many questions? It's like, I don't care. How many times am I going to get to talk to him? It captures that. Randall did a really amazing job of capturing that kind of access.
And it's also a really special thing. I must say, as a regular interviewer of people, there is also a wonderful, earlier, a couple of years ago, Randall interviewed Chris as part of a thing, and it went online. And his opening question was, when you were on the ISS, do you get to know and be familiar with parts of Earth that you see down to that you didn't expect? And I'm not sure I'm getting the question exactly right, but Chris said, wow, I've never gotten that question before. And I'm thinking, this guy gets interviewed like every other day of his whole life. And that's a brand new question. That's pretty amazing. Randall's also an amazing interviewer, as well as being a great interviewee.
I was thinking about Chris a lot this weekend because I saw Ad Astra.
How was it?
We should talk about it.
Okay. The tweet that I saw was Ad Astra is Latin for good first hour.
it's Latin for to the stars, Adam. But that wasn't the best. Oh, my God. You guys have seen the trailer, right?
Not really.
The general premise?
Yeah. Kind of,
right?
Space.
Brad Pitt in space. He's going to the edge of the solar system to meet his.
Brad Pitt.
Right. Yeah. You know, what was that? Was there a BuzzFeed headline? Right. Brad Astra. Get sad Astra, looking for his dad Astra, who may be bad Astra in the new film, Ad Astra.
Nice.
That's a good BuzzFeed headline.
There was a Reddit comment, like, I like this film. I think I would have liked it more if I hated my dad. Like, well, you got the movie. We should talk about it.
Okay, but I will see it. I haven't seen it.
I will say the world building that they do is exceptional. It's phenomenal.
Years in the future?
It's an indeterminate time in the quote near future, okay. But the type of realistic look, quote unquote realistic, filmic look at what space travel would be like within our solar system.
Hard sci-fi, but not.
Yeah. I believe Chris Gilman at Global Effects.
There are so many different spacesuits.
Yeah.
So many different ones.
Really? I'm really curious about if any of those are going to come on the market.
I guess if you can watch it on the biggest screen possible on IMAX or Dolby, I recommend doing that.
Okay, I'll make time this week and go see it.
We want more movies like this.
Good. I also want to see Hustlers. I'm dying.
Oh, I saw that last weekend or last week too.
Hustlers is the
J-Lo
and
heist film.
Yeah.
Not a heist film. No, it's
okay. I don't want to know nothing.
That's it. Go watch it.
J-Lo is one of my heroes.
Yeah. You know, it surfaced again this weekend because she was at some fashion show, but then
she wore the green dress,
but it surfaced that green dress is what's responsible for the creation of Google Images.
Really?
Because
Because everyone was Googling.
Everyone was Googling at that time, just Google text search, J-Lo green dress, and then the engineers at Google realized, we don't have a solution for this. People just want to see the pictures.
I remember when image search first came up and I was blowing people's minds with it.
So here, let's just have a tab for image search.
Amazing.
And
it was really the beginning of
prompted
the
by,
Google.
Yeah.
All right. They started adding more tabs. Now there's shopping and news, all this. Yeah. Anyway.
She's always been an amazing actress. Like
Out of Sight.
Out
is
of Sight.
Just astounding.
Out of Sight's amazing. Enough. Enough is like,
dude. The Wedding Planner's good.
I agree with you.
It's a good San Francisco movie.
Yeah,
we don't make those romantic comedies anymore.
Having recently watched the first 20 minutes of The Wedding Planner again.
Yeah, no,
it does not hold up as well as you hope it does.
I'm okay.
Before we continue with this week's episode, I want to let you know that Still Entitled this week is made possible with support from M&M's Hazelnut Spread Chocolate Candies. When you need to hit pause on the demands of everyday life, grab the new M&M's Hazelnut Spread Chocolate Candies, guaranteed to deliver a delicious combo of hazelnut spread and milk chocolate in every bite-sized piece. M&M's Hazelnut Spread is going where no hazelnut spread has gone before, right inside M&M's Chocolate Candies. If you love M&M's Chocolate Candies and you love hazelnut spread, just wait until you try these together for the first time. They've added a delicious hazelnut spread to the center of smooth M&M's milk chocolate and crunchy candy shell. Enjoy them on their own or use them to dress up your favorite other treats. Just imagine them baked in the cookies or sprinkled on top of your go-to ice cream flavor. I used to eat hazelnut spread directly out of jars in college. All that deliciousness and energy would get me through those long nights, and now I can have them in a perfect bite-sized portion in the M&M's new hazelnut spread chocolate candies. In fact, I've been salivating the entire time reading this. Go hazelnutty and try the new M&M's hazelnut spread chocolate candies today. And now back to the conversation.
However, you saw something recently.
Yeah, so I had a sick wife and kid this weekend. So
I'm
I got
lots of phlegm, lots of snot.
Not the good kind of sick. They were resting yesterday, and I watched the rest of Boys this weekend.
Oh, which good.
We should talk about a little bit.
Yeah.
But I watched Bull Durham for the first time. And it used to be like a springtime ritual where I'd watch it at the beginning of spring.
Yeah.
But after watching it this time at the end of the baseball season,
yeah,
I think it might be an end of baseball season movie, not a beginning of baseball season movie.
Is baseball the one? I guess sports movies in general are great for people who don't even like sports, right? Like, if you don't actively watch sports.
It depends on the movie. Yeah.
Like, Durham. Moneyball.
Look, Moneyball is good.
I have to say, I just think that Kevin Costner should only ever play washed up aging sports heroes. Between Tin Cup, For the Love of the Game, Upside of Anger, which is...
I've never seen that.
Upside of Anger is a phenomenal movie starring Joan Allen, one of the greatest actresses of our generation. A murderer's row of actresses play her daughters, including Keri Russell.
Wow.
Christensen.
Helena Christensen?
What's that?
Not Helena Christensen.
It's a Mike Binder film.
Okay.
Directed by Mike Binder. He has a small role in it. Terrific movie. And Costner plays an aging sports hero. Basically, every time he's playing an old sports guy, I'm in that movie. Because I recently watched Bull Durham only about 3 or 4 months ago.
That triangle is exceptional in that, you know, you have the young up and comer, who now looks like he's about 15 years older than Kevin Costner.
Yeah, except that it's so funny to see Tim
Robbins
play effectively a dumb teenager,
a goofball.
Yeah,
yeah. Because like all of the other places he's played, I can't remember the name of that movie that was. He was the sinister suburbs guy.
War of the Worlds.
No. It was like a taut psychological thriller.
I don't know.
Anyway, he played a really menacing. He's played really menacing characters.
Yeah,
he's played,
especially in War of the Worlds. He's terrifying.
Yeah, and he's just such a feckless goofball.
Yeah.
In Bull Durham,
it's a perfect pair of terms.
And like everything from I was watching even his delivery. He does like a 50s inspired screwball windup where he looks up at the sky and then just wangs him out there.
Yeah.
Well, it's Hudsucker Proxy. Yeah, it's his character.
It is. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of the same character as Hudsucker Proxy.
Yeah.
But the Hudsucker Proxy guy had a vision, and I think that Nuke Lelouch is an empty vessel.
Hmm.
Which Kevin Costner pours all of the knowledge into. And it's just a lovely story that everybody holds their own in that movie. The sexual politics of the mid-80s.
Yeah, Well, and it just wouldn't have been made that way today.
And the thing that I realized about that movie is I feel like they set it in like the late 70s when it was made in the mid 80s.
Yeah.
Like if you look at like the buses are those kind of curved top 70s designs. The cars are all 50s, 60s, and 70s cars.
But I think 5 years ago in the mid 80s was what the coastal cities thought of the Midwest.
Oh,
right. Like you guys are 5 years behind.
Yeah,
so that was kind of Hollywood's version of that.
But I think it makes the movie a little bit more timeless in a way than if it was set in the time that it was made. I think if you go 5 years in the past, you have an idea of what the vision of that time was.
Susan Sarandon's luminous in the film.
Like it's that role, her name's Annie Savoy, I think, is just, it's such a, she's so full of shit.
Yep.
And
actually the stuff that I found held up the least were the things that were the big selling points of the movie back when it came out. So his speech about, I'll tell you what I believe in, is unwatchable to me now.
You look at it and it's still a piece of film history that is the thing that everybody remembers from that movie.
Right.
But the thing that's good is the dancing at the end. right? When
the dancing at the end, his challenge to meet out inside the ballpark where he's throwing a baseball at me.
Yeah.
Right? Those little moments, it earns all of its dramatic moments.
When Millie and Annie are working with Nuke pitching after the failed road, like the road trip montage is so good.
Yeah.
Like all of the things that they do, it has all of those like pieces and they're put together in such a delightful way and it all comes together. It's a perfect movie. It's one of my favorites.
Why did he never play an astronaut?
Costner?
Yeah.
Has he really never played an astronaut?
Right. Wasn't he a space cowboy? No.
No, he wasn't a space cowboy, and I don't think he's ever played any of the Mercury.
He didn't.
I know Jim Lovell wanted him.
The thing is that Jim Lovell during Apollo 13 looked exactly like
Kevin
Costner.
Right?
No, yeah. I mean it was uncanny how much he looked like Kevin Costner.
He's in Hidden Figures, which is, I think, the closest he's come to.
Okay. He's worked at NASA on film.
Yeah. I finished, I'm caught up, watched the latest episode of Succession last night.
I have heard so many people talking about that I need to go and watch it.
It's worth watching. It's, you got to be ready for some deep psychological damage because it is just about the most screwed up family, the messed up toll that the horrifying patriarch played by Brian Cox has enacted upon his five kids in this show. Every one of them is just a complete train wreck. Kieran Culkin brings a level of charisma that is up there with Robert Downey Jr. And super compelling and amazing and has a character arc with another character in the second season, which is sort of mind blowing and amazing.
All right.
Succession is great. It's just, it's really dark.
One last hit on Bull Durham. Shout out to Robert Wall because his performance as like the assistant manager is
totally
maybe
right.
The best like coaching performance in a sports movie ever.
Well, and that wonderful bit. So Bull Durham also doesn't do anything to educate the audience. You're deep in technical talk and they don't help you explain. When Costner first meets Wall and he's like, oh yeah, you and I met at the blah, 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 and you sent me an easy pitch and I tattooed it over the, right? And they're going through all this terminology, not helping you know what it means.
Well, and they play what looks like real, for a movie, it's very real baseball. Like they don't have, like there's a moment when...
It's not like movie poker.
Yeah, it's not like movie poker, right. It's not like... Oh,
My plan is to get the best hand while you have the second best hand.
Here's my four of a kind, your royal flush, sir. No, but he, like there's a moment, there's multiple moments where he's on the mound and it's the perfect time for him to just zing a fastball right down the middle or for Kevin Costner to tee one up and knock it out of the park. And they don't do it.
And on that front, a shout out to For the Love of the Game.
That movie is great, too.
Which is a terrific Sam Raimi film. I believe, if I remember correctly, it was a film that Sam Raimi took to convince the studio, that helped convince the studios he could direct the Spider-Man franchise.
Oh.
So it was like Evil Dead to For the Love of the Game? Evil Dead 2, probably?
No. There are several in between there. Darkman was part of that. Right. There's a whole bunch of... But For the Love of the Game just doesn't feel like in Sam Raimi's canon, and it's a terrific movie. Kelly Preston's fantastic in it. Wow. John C. Reilly plays his catcher. It's basically the story of Kevin Costner at the end of his career pitching a perfect game.
Ah.
And musing over a failed relationship. And I've watched it maybe four times. I love it. It's not a romantic comedy, but it is a romantic drama and a very sweet movie.
Yeah.
Baseball movies are all romantic.
Baseball movies are inherently.
Oh, right. We forgot Field of Dreams.
Yeah.
It's my least favorite.
I totally agree. It's my least favorite, too.
I mean, Field of Dreams is about death, not baseball.
Yeah.
It happens to be set in a baseball field.
Yeah.
League of Their Own is exceptional, though. Remains amazing.
I have never seen League of Their Own.
Tom Hanks, Gina Davis, Madonna.
Robert Wall must be in that, too.
I think he might be. I think he's a reporter or a caller, like the commentator or something, maybe.
Could be.
Robert Wall. I watched the original Batman, the 1989 one, a few weeks ago. Robert Wall's great in that too. He plays the journalist.
Knox.
That's right.
I mean, they're all kind of that Hudsucker Proxy comic book. Like they are pulp comic characters.
Totally. 40s. Yes. Reminiscing of the 40s.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Speaking of Succession, HBO. There was the Emmys last night. So we want to give a congratulations.
Shout out to Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Exactly.
For all of her amazing awards.
Yes. Writing best show and actress, I believe.
And performer of the year.
Yeah.
Oh, really? She
yeah.
got performer of the year, too?
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow.
Yeah. She killed. That show kills. That show slaps. That show sings. It's amazing.
It's very good. I was looking to see if he was in... He's not, that I can see. Anyway.
Did you watch the Emmys last night? We didn't. We just played cards.
It's a little bits. Little bits. I actually watched a lot of the Creative Arts Emmys.
Oh,
yeah,
the Schmemmys.
That was fun. The Schmemmys. I always enjoy watching.
So every year we have friends that, I mean, I went and lost 8 times. So we had friends and a kind of a whole social group over there at the Emmys that we connect with every year. And my friend Michael and his wife and my wife and I would usually dance together.
Oh.
So this year, Michael and his wife sent us footage of them dancing.
That's funny.
From the party, Wish You Were Here. That was sweet.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the boys a little bit?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. We did.
Let's do this.
We mostly spoiled it last week.
Hold on. Should we wrap up anything else first?
No.
I think we can jump right into it. But if you haven't seen the boys, just turn it off now. I think we're going to talk.
we'll do a fake outro. So we'll end the podcast as is with our shout outs. Next week, we're going to be at New York Comic Con.
Yes, New York Comic Con.
There's amazing Incognito that we'll have the videos for shortly after.
Sorry, actually, and I have a bit of housekeeping to do. Next Friday, I am doing a New York Comic Con event, small, 300 people only, Friday at 4:30 as part of Anime Fest.
Yep.
The VIP is sold out, but general admission tickets are still available, and... You get a signed, I don't know if you get one of these, but you get a signed poster of mine.
Of some kind. Yeah.
Yes. Cool. So next Friday, come to Anime Fest and you can come see me do a panel there.
And I believe you don't need tickets in your Comic Con to go to
Anime
Fest. That's
correct. You don't need a Comic Con pass for that.
Yeah. So that's going to be next Friday, October, I want to say 4th or so.
I started a new podcast.
Yes. I tweeted about it.
You did. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We, friend of the site and former Whiskey Media co-worker of Norm's and mine, Brad Shoemaker and I, are doing a single topic, once weekly tech podcast where we just talk about one thing for 30 or 45 minutes.
I love the idea of this.
Hopefully you like the execution too. It's called Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod, which was a placeholder name. And then we did a soft launch.
It's sort of like still untitled.
It's kind of like, so yeah, it was a soft launch that got hard unexpectedly. And we reserve the right to change the name, but it's out there. You can find it at techpod.content.town.
Wow.
Which is my favorite terrible domain I've ever registered.
Okay.
.town.
Content.town.
I also would be remiss if I didn't say my regular New York Comic Con panel is Saturday morning, where I will be interviewed by my friend and amazing science communicator, Kyle Hill.
Ooh, from Saturday Nerds. Afternoon.
Saturday afternoon. Sorry.
3:30 p.m.
That's awesome.
Yes. My apologies.
And walking, you're doing costume walks?
I am doing costume walks. I'm doing more than one. I'm doing one with a friend early on the con, and then I'm doing an official one, which is actually 90% ready.
It looks really
amazingly
good.
Amazingly, I have only a few hours of work left on this costume.
It's going to be good.
Be careful.
Yeah.
Don't fly too close. We were going to talk about Icarus moments today. We should save that for next week.
Let's save that for next week.
Housekeeping done.
Yeah. Now it's time to talk about the boys.
All right.
So, holy crap. The
boys.
It's
a dark show.
Yeah, it opens incredibly dark.
Yeah.
It's unpleasantly rapey all the way through.
Yeah.
Like even like there's mental abuse, coercion, all sorts of horrible weird power dynamics.
The Superman breastfeeding?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought Elizabeth Shue's character is, I think, maybe the creepiest.
Elizabeth Shue is amazing.
She's exceptional.
Show. God, incredible.
So when I thought I had read The Boys 20 years ago, by the way, I'm pretty sure I was thinking of something else that Garth Ennis wrote.
The Preacher.
Probably The Preacher.
Oh, wow. So,
which also is disturbing, but not anything approaching this. I thought when you were talking about this, I was like, oh, it's like Brightburn. It's going to be scary, yada, yada.
Right.
Superman, if he's a dick, is scary. But
yeah.
No, this is way worse than Brightburn.
It's right
because it brings late stage capitalistic corporate venality into the mix with pure unadulterated psychopathic evil.
Well,
and
although the two things could be considered the same.
In Brightburn, there is no illusion that the kid is good or evil. Right, kid is evil. It's a horror film.
They present it as the kid is a loss.
Right.
Here, Homelander is
ambiguous for a while until
I did not think that at all.
I you know, I was basically taking it on faith. Like, okay, we don't know yet. They haven't told me. They haven't explained.
It's not to us, to the world.
Yeah, that world. I mean, yes, the most disconcerting part of the whole thing is knowing what you know about these awful people and then watching the crowds cheer for them all the way through.
Yep. Maybe the most upsetting, intense commentary on today.
I mean, look, we could argue that it is ripped straight from the headlines for 40% of the country. It's fascinating. They ended it. That's how the comic. I haven't read the entire.
No, it's not tied to the comics really. Okay.
They're just totally continuing. I was really impressed and I was surprised by how upsetting the scene in which the townie rapes Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
Scene where she like starts slipping her fingers into his gills. Super upsetting. I literally was like barely able to stay in the room with my television while that was going on.
I mean,
he's a super problematic, fucked up character too. Like he's a bad guy. He is one of the villains.
And then it's comedic effect. Like
it's far from comedic though.
I'm saying his situation.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Being abandoned in Peoria where he ends up is justice for bad Aquaman. I thought that the girl who plays Starlight, I looked up her name before we started, I can't remember.
She's terrific.
Unbelievable.
Yep.
The speech, the kind of turning point of the whole series for me was when she's standing at the evangelical conference and she's like getting ready to do the rah-rah speech. She's like, no, fuck it. Here's the truth.
Yeah.
And
she brings that the actress brings such a level of intelligent, introspective presence to the role that it's really fascinating. I really liked, I said this last time, but I really liked that she also, I liked the arc between her and Dennis Quaid's son,
mm-hmm.
yep. Jack Quaid.
Jack Quaid. Yeah.
Dennis Quaid's son is
Huey.
Yeah.
Who in the comic books was drawn to look like Simon Pegg, and which is why Simon Pegg is in the show.
I didn't realize that. That's funny. Yes. And how wonderful is it to see Carl Urban getting such a meaty, fat, delightful role to sink his teeth into?
His whole speech about the Spice Girls was hilarious.
Unbelievable.
In the subway. Yeah. I can't wait for second season to hopefully learn more about Black Noir.
Yes.
Black Noir just
which
just
was
there.
Weirdly comedic.
Yes.
But I mean, you have no idea what Black Noir's intentions are. The arc between, Queen Maeve.
Yeah.
And Starlight.
Oh, and Starlight. Great, yes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Speaking of this, because it definitely feels like a psychological precursor, I'm really excited about The Watchmen coming up. Have you seen the trailer for it?
I'm tepid on it. I'm kind of, I think The Boys kind of took away that excitement for me a little bit.
I watched the trailer last night and I was super chuffed about it.
So I really like, I know this is controversial, but I like the Zack Snyder kind of devoid of subtext beyond the visuals Watchmen
because
I think
it's all text
entirely fitting for the
visual director.
He's what?
That's what the internet says.
Free the Snyder Cut.
He's a visual director.
I like that movie a lot. I think it's a I think it's very true. I think the ending for that is way better than the bad ending of the graphic novel.
Interesting. Okay.
A perfect exercise in adaptation.
I think I'm probably good without any more Watchmen.
Oh, all right.
I'll watch it.
Hey,
I'll watch The Watchmen.
I'm sold on Lindelof since Leftovers.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna give it a chance.
The thing that I always know that I'm gonna get with Damon Lindelof's productions is a genuine emotion. He is really interested in character and emotional arcs, and it's always going to be deep. I'm one of the fans who loves the ending of Lost. Mm-hmm. I know that not everybody does. I've watched it twice. I'm a big fan. I'm really excited about it.
15 years since Lost came out.
Crazy.
The dread on Carl Urban's face when he meets the Homelander and his wife's son. And then
at
sees
the
his
end.
Wife
yeah.
in the last moments of
and
that
And then you
episode.
Realize just how, because I figured that out about 10 minutes beforehand or whatever it was.
My assumption when the two stories didn't match up was that there was a kid.
Yeah.
I was surprised that she survived.
At the perfect place to end that season.
Yeah. And super dark. I mean, super, super dark.
There's you can't help. Like, what next? Yeah. What next?
Yeah.
What?
Like, yeah. You just want to hit the next episode.
Oh God, so, I so want there.
Yeah. Yeah. It was. It's
hey, if there are any producers of The Boys who listen to this podcast and want Tustin to maybe do a one day build of a prop for next season, you let us know.
Oh, you're there.
I'm so there.
Make some prosthetic gills.
I couldn't do it better than they did it, man. Excellent makeup work.
I mean, the production on that thing was incredible.
Really, really well done.
Across the board.
Oh, my God. I love that show.
Okay.
Let's leave it there.
Yes.
Show's good.
You two go watch Hustlers.
Will do.
Go watch Ad Astra, and we'll talk about it.
All right.
Okay. Techpod.content.town.
All right. Thanks, see you next week. Bye.